I'm going to call to order a regular meeting for the Grover Beach City Council. This is Monday, October 15, 2018. Would you all please stand and rise with us for a moment of silence for the brave women and men who sacrifice daily for our freedoms and liberties? Thank you. Please remain standing for our flag salute. This is usually the best part of our meeting. We have the youth involved, and they come down and help lead us in the flag salute. So tonight, we are honored to have Chloe Forster. She is an eight-year-old third-grade student at Grover Heights Elementary School. She likes math and thinks the teacher is really nice. Chloe likes living on the Central Coast and being near the ocean because making sandcastles is her favorite thing to do. She wants to attend Cal Poly to become an engineer when she graduates, and her hobbies are softball, drawing, and she's a Girl Scout. I believe Chloe this evening is accompanied by, I think, parents, mom and dad. Excellent. And you got a sister here? Oh, fantastic. What's your sister's name? Abby. Okay, welcome. Chloe, when you're ready, you can come on up. Come up here, I have something for you. And is your teacher here tonight, too? Wow. What's your teacher? This is for you. Thank you for coming in. If you want to hold it now and let me take a picture. She's pretty smart. Let's, I'm done, and let's get the heck out of here. Thank you, Chloe. All right, let's have a roll call, please.
Councilmember Nichols.
Here.
Councilmember Peterson.
Here.
Councilmember Shaw.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Lee.
Here.
And Mayor Scholes.
Present. Thank you, Donna. Let's go to our closed session announcements. City Attorney.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. On Monday, October 1st, 2018, the Council convened in closed session related to a conference with legal counsel on anticipated litigation. Based on existing facts and circumstances, there is significant exposure to litigation. This was pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9D2. Upon reconvening into open session, we announced that there was no reportable actions taken.
Very good. Thank you, City Attorney. Let's move on to agenda review. This is where the council reviews the agenda and the order of business to be conducted and decides if we want to make any changes to the agenda. Do any members of the council want to change anything in the agenda or the order?
No.
Okay.
I'll make a motion that we proceed with the agenda as published.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. If there's no additional discussion on that motion, all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? None. Motion carries. So we will proceed with the agenda as published. I believe there are extra copies on the table at the back of the room. So with that, we're going to move on to our ceremonial calendar this evening. This is item number one. This is a proclamation declaring the week of October 23rd through the 31st, 2018 as Red Ribbon Week. Council Member Nichols.
Proclamation of the City Council of the City of Grover Beach declaring the week of October 23 through October 31, 2018 as Red Ribbon Week in the City of Grover Beach. Whereas tobacco, alcohol, and other drug use and abuse represents a serious public health and safety threat to our city, our county, California, and throughout the United States. And whereas it is important for communities, schools, and individuals throughout San Luis County to work together to eliminate the demand for these substances and to promote programs that support commitment to a healthy, drug-free style. And whereas the Red Ribbon Celebration will be observed across the United States during Red Ribbon Week, October 23 to 31, 2018, and whereas parents, youth, government, business, law enforcement, schools, religious institutions, service organizations, social services, health services, media, and the general public will demonstrate their commitment to drug-free communities by wearing and displaying red ribbons during the observance. And whereas Red Ribbon Week highlights social substance abuse prevention programs that involve youth and parents yearly through local community coalitions and numerous countywide organizations, and also recognize this year's theme, Life is Your Journey, Travel Drug-Free. And whereas the City of Grover Beach further commits resources to help success of the Red Ribbon Celebration and year-round tobacco, alcohol, and other drug preventive efforts. And whereas Red Ribbon Week 2018 will be highlighted by all three elementary schools in Grover Beach, now therefore be it be resolved that the City Council of the City of Grover Beach hereby supports October 23 to 31, 2018 as Red Ribbon Week and encourages all citizens to participate in tobacco, alcohol, and other drug prevention activities, making a visible commitment to healthy communities in which to raise a generation of drug-free youth. Be it further resolved that the Grover Beach City Council encourages all community members to follow the Red Ribbon Pledge. No use of illegal drugs and no illegal use of legal drugs. In witness thereof, I hereby set my hand this 15th day of October 2018, John Scholes, Mayor, and Donna McMahon, City Clerk.
Very good, and I believe Commander Miller is accepting this proclamation. Any of the other officers are coming up with you? Come on up, gentlemen. Okay, we're going to move on to item number two. This is still under the ceremonial calendar, and this is a proclamation declaring November 2018 as National Hospice and Palliative Care Month. Councilmember Shaw.
Yes. Whereas hospice and palliative care empower people facing a serious or life-limiting illness to live as fully as possible, surrounded and supported by family and loved ones, and hospice and palliative care professionals are dedicated to helping diverse communities access quality end-of-life care and are committed to removing barriers to accessing care. And whereas hospice and palliative care bring patients and family caregivers the highest quality care delivered by an interdisciplinary team of skilled professionals that includes physicians, nurses, social workers, therapists, counselors, health aides, spiritual care providers, and volunteers who make the wishes of each patient and family a priority. And whereas, through pain management and symptom control, caregiver training and assistance, and emotional, spiritual, and practical support, Hospice and palliative care allows patients to live fully and more meaningful moments until the end, surrounded and supported by the faces of loved ones, friends, and committed caregivers. And whereas every year more than 1.4 million Americans living with life-limiting illnesses and their families receive care from the nation's hospice programs in communities throughout the United States, and more than 300,000 trained volunteers contribute 16 million hours of service to hospice programs annually in the U.S. And whereas Central Coast Hospice, Dignity Health Hospice, Hospice of San Luis Obispo, and Wilshire Hospice provide hospice care and bereavement counseling respectively to individuals within the county of San Luis Obispo, and hospice and palliative care providers encourage all people to learn more about options of care and to share their wishes with family, loved ones, and their healthcare professionals. Now, therefore, be it resolved, the City Council of the City of Grover Beach does hereby proclaim November 2018 as National Hospice and Palliative Care Month and encourages citizens to increase their understanding and awareness of care at the end of life and to observe this month with appropriate activities and programs.
Okay, very good. And then is Paulo Reyes and Jesse Watson? I guess they're both with Outreach and Public Relations Coordinator for Hospice of SLO. Thanks. Come on forward.
That's okay. I'll take her a picture.
Well, thank you all for declaring November National Hospice and Palliative Care Month. I work for Hospice SLO County. We're one of four hospice organizations on the Central Coast. So families and individuals who are facing life-limiting illnesses, end of life and grief, are very fortunate in this county to have four organizations that work collaboratively together to provide service. So the three other hospices we work with, Central Coast Hospice, Dignity Health Hospice, and Wilshire Hospice, provide medical services to those facing the end of life. Our hospice is a volunteer hospice, Hospice SLO County. We provide non-medical services, so we are often providing support services to the families in addition to the services that they receive medically through the medical hospices. I'm sure as many people in this room know, a lot of times when a family member falls ill or is at the end of life, the primary caregiver is another family member. It's someone who's not professional, not someone who's trained. It often upends someone's life. And while it can be very fulfilling in many ways to care for a loved one at the end of life, it can also be very challenging in unexpected ways, unexpected ones. So our hope as a volunteer hospice and as part of the network of community partners and other hospice organizations in this area is we hope to alleviate some of the stress going on with families and to make sure that they're supported in all the different ways, not just medically, but also practically, you know, having caregiver respite, giving those caregivers, you know, some hours during the week to themselves, providing counseling services, taking care of the emotional side of things, and the spiritual side, and whatever the family needs. So again, thank you all for your support. We're very grateful.
Thank you for all you do to help folks. Thanks, Sick. So thanks to Councilmember Shaw and Nichols for reading those and the exhortation, long proclamations and some tongue twisters are in there. So at this point, I do want to exercise the chair's prerogative. We want to, we actually have another special, I guess, ceremony or acknowledgement. So we want to, I'm going to need to, at this point, turn this over to the city manager, and we'll go from there.
Thank you. Thank you. Good evening, members of the council, Mr. Mayor, council members. It is my duty tonight to recognize and indicate that we have a milestone in our midst this evening. Tonight marks the final council meeting for our beloved city clerk, Donna McMahon, who is retiring on November 13th after 20 years of esteemed exemplary service to the city of Grover Beach and Grover Beach community. We couldn't let this moment pass without recognizing Donna in her final council meeting. I was doing the math earlier, and roughly 20 years, kind of roughly, say, 20 meetings a year, give or take. That's 400 plus or minus meetings over that esteemed tenure. Quite a lengthy, exemplary record of service to this community. Donna has exemplified public service, exemplified what it means to be a public servant in serving the community with distinction, in being a guardian of democracy, of being somebody who has opened the doors of City Hall and city government and local government to the community and been a wonderful ambassador of public service to the community. So we take this moment and recognize Donna, and I have some colleagues here helping me with this. We wanted to mark this occasion and bring a small token of our appreciation. And we know Donna loves this so much. Donna is somebody, as we know, who does not relish the limelight. She works very, very hard to help enable the council, enable the organization to be successful. But we wanted to take this moment and provide her with well-deserved recognition and praise for everything she has done for our organization, for the council, and for the community for these many years. She is going off to help with her family and have some much-deserved time, more personal time, and we certainly value that as well. We wanted to come in and say thank you to Donna, recognize her, and certainly I'd like to turn over to the council to offer some additional comments as well.
Very good. So but before we do that, and Donna, I just got to tell you, they twisted both arms. I know this is not comfortable for you, but it is a moment that we just could not pass up. So I hope you will accept our apologies and graciously accept our appreciations. So, Mr. Lieberman, Ms. Allison.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Steve Lieberman and Nancy Allison from Grover Beach. And if may I may have your permission to actually look at Donna in fear. Just wanted to come as a citizen, a longtime citizen, and Donna and I have some unique timing in that I was a volunteer firefighter here, and I started paying attention to what was going on up there. And pulled papers and ran as a city council candidate when Donna was brand new to the city. Our kids were infant and 4 years old. I don't want to say how old they are now. one of them's of legal drinking age. And just you've been there for myself, my family, the community, Donna. I mean, I think we're both really connected to this community, and I just want to appreciate everything you've done for us. I mean, you're really, truly the glue that holds us all together. Whether it's being nice and whispering something as a reminder or a friendly nag, it's never aggressive, and it's always well warranted. So on behalf of my family and the community, just want to thank you.
Thank you for those kind words. Was there anyone else from the community that wanted to come up and say anything? Aaron, did you want to come up?
As a longtime attendee of council meetings and kind of being involved in the city and having a lot of questions and not knowing what I was doing, I always turn to Donna. She's always gracious, always took the time. It, was like you were the only one that she had to worry about at that moment. Donna, thank you from the community.
Thank you, Sharon. Let me see if any about the council members. Barbara?
I think I've known Donna for about 13 years now, and I think the saying that she is the glue that holds this place together is absolutely true. Always dependable, always with a smile, always gracious, and we love you.
Mayor Pro Tem?
And I'll reiterate all the comments that have been said as well and say thank you on behalf of myself and my family and the community as well. And I guess I'm only slightly curious as to why you didn't put the flowers in front of you so we couldn't see you so you can hide. Please enjoy your retirement, enjoy your family, enjoy coming back to see us whenever you can because we will definitely miss you.
Councilmember Shaw.
Yes, thank you, Donna. When I came in 4 years ago, I had so many binders to read and so many things to get, and you were so patient and kind, and you're just so professional, but in such a nice way, and it's just wonderful. And I think just having gone through now 4 years of public service and hearing everything from the community, I've never heard anything but just praise for you. And I think that's just nearly impossible these days. So you really are going to be a tough act to follow, and we're just going to miss you so much.
Councilmember Peterson.
Well, after I was trying to count after at least 35 years working in the public sector and the private sector, I can honestly say that what's coming from people here is not the kind of normal nice stuff you say, but it's really from the heart. I have never seen a more dedicated, more gracious member of staff anywhere in the world. So thank you so much. And I'm so thrilled, as you know, I was so thrilled to hear that you were going to spend more time with your family. And now I just want to cry.
Wow, the good thing about getting to go last is everybody else has said everything. And actually, the really good thing is when Steve Lieberman comes up. Well, the bad thing is he steals half my thunder. The good news is he's the first one to kind of tear up, you know. So I'm going to be strong tonight. I actually wanted to I got you something for you and your family. I want to say everybody's right on the money. This lady has been the glue of this organization for the time she's been here and during the time I've been involved in community service. And that means that she doesn't get the accolades in public, but she's the one holding us together. And I think it's heartfelt. And the city manager knows I'm always asking the question of staff, are you committed to a job or are you committed to the community? Because I think it's really important for staff to be committed to this community. Donna, your commitment and dedication is unparalleled. Your support for your work colleagues in this council is amazing. You've been gracious, you've been ethical, you've been hardworking, you've been supportive, and I for one can say we've been through some tough times, and having you there has made all the difference in the world for me, so thank you very much. But I have this for you. So now that we've thoroughly embarrassed her, we're not going to ask her to make any comments. I think her work goes without saying, and we know she's the most important person in this room. So with that, we're gonna move on. Public communications. This is an opportunity for any member of the public to address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes total on any item of interest within the jurisdiction of this council. The council will listen to all communications, however, in compliance with the Brown Act. We cannot take action on any items that are not on the agenda. I don't have any speaker request forms, but let me see if there's any members of the community that would like to speak during public communications. Okay, seeing no one come forward, let me close it, bring it back to the council. We're going to move on to our consent agenda. Consent is usually when we take routine items as a group And so tonight, it looks like we have four items on consent. I guess it's four plus the last six is several city council minutes. I'm not going to read each item, but I'm going to see if any members of the council wants to pull, has a question or wants to pull any item from consent.
None.
Okay. Someone prepared to make a motion?
I'll make a motion that we approve the consent agenda as published.
Second.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. If there's no additional discussion on that motion, it looks like we can do this with a voice vote. There are no resolutions involved. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? None. Motion carries. All right, moving along. We do not have any public hearing items tonight. So we're going to move right into our regular business. This is item number 7, if you are following along. This is a homeless shelter crisis declaration, and I'm going to turn this over to City Manager Bronson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. What's before you this evening is a request from staff to declare a homeless shelter crisis to enable the city to be eligible for new state funding in the current budget. So back in June, the governor signed SB 850, which was legislation that created what's called the Homeless Emergency Aid Program, or HEAP. I'll be using the acronym quite a bit throughout this presentation, HEAP. That passage, along with a budget allocation, set up a one-time $500 million block grant for local governments for addressing homelessness across California. SLO County is eligible for $4.8 million of this $500 million statewide. It is based on the point-in-time count, meaning the number of homeless individuals that were identified within the county, along with the percent of homeless population. So it's a formulaic approach in creating those different estimates. The state law did require every jurisdiction that wishes to be eligible for this funding to formally declare a shelter crisis. And this language is very specific in the statutes. It's a shelter crisis in order to be eligible for such funding through this process that the counties actually take the lead on at each county level. I'll note that the city of Rio Grande did adopt a declaration on September 25th, and three other cities are scheduled to consider such a resolution or declaration coming up in November, along with the county of San Luis Obispo. The county does have to submit its application on behalf of the county as a whole to the state by the end of the calendar year. Back in 2017, the last point in time count that was conducted, we did estimate that there were 60 homeless individuals that were counted in Grover Beach during that particular survey. As you may recall, the point in time survey is a one-time survey that goes out over, I believe, a one-day process and counts individuals all across the community who are identified as homeless. In our case, the 60 individuals identified were all unsheltered, meaning that they were identified on the streets, they're identified in an encampment or in a public space, not in a shelter space. In AG, they had roughly 95 individuals, 9 in Pismo, all told about 1,100 individuals countywide were identified in this count. The Shelter Crisis Declaration does provide some opportunities and advantages to a jurisdiction that adopts it. First of all, it does provide some degree of limited immunity from negligence liability and provide some flexibility in taking actions to help support homeless services and homeless needs across the community. It does allow the city to become eligible for the HEAP funding, as I mentioned. I will note that there are opportunities for funds to be spent within the city for capital projects, even if a jurisdiction does not formally declare a shelter crisis. But the declaration does enable direct funding to be provided to the city organization, city government, for services and projects within that jurisdiction. In general, the declaration is intended to offer some flexibility to the community in order to have some creativity and opportunities in creating secure shelter space. So again, it's a one-time, $500 million allotment. It is designed for those who are currently homeless or those who are at immediate risk of becoming homeless. There are a number of possible uses of the funds, which include homelessness prevention activities, criminal justice programs, services for homeless youth, which we have done quite a bit in this area, and emergency aid. I will note that there also are opportunities for capital projects, for shelter spaces, for specific facility needs through the funding. And again, the state has stressed that the parameters are fairly broad in order to allow communities to be creative, to be collaborative, to work on addressing homelessness in unique ways using these grant dollars as a tool. The process is such that the state government will provide funds to what's called the continuum of care. In other words, the county organization that is the clearinghouse for receiving the funds at the county level. And then the county from there will determine how best to utilize the funds across the county based on jurisdictions that declare a shelter crisis, as well as other needs, even if jurisdictions don't declare a shelter crisis. I'll note that the county itself is looking at declaring a crisis in November, but that's only for unincorporated areas of the county. So the county cannot declare this crisis declaration for every jurisdiction within the county. And again, if jurisdictions do not declare such a crisis, there could be funds spent within the jurisdiction. They just aren't flowing to the city government in order to support city-directed services and programs. The process is operating fairly quickly as these state statutes and state grant programs go. I mentioned the December 31st deadline for the county to submit its application to the state. The first round of grant awards is to be identified by the end of January, with the second round by the end of May. So the state is intending to move this process fairly quickly in the new calendar year. I'll note that the County of San Luis Obispo has been working diligently to begin creating criteria, begin identifying potential projects and services. They're reaching out to every city and beginning to identify possibilities. Both Councilmember Shaw and I met with county staff today just to begin talking about different possibilities as a prelude for our conversation this evening. This work also builds on the extensive collaboration done within the South County area between the different cities and groups like the Five Cities Homeless Coalition. And I'll note that both Jana Nichols and Mike Bird from the coalition are here this evening and can speak further to the council. The legislation requires a lot of collaboration in applying for these grant funds, and I think that does build on the track record we have in the South County for looking collaboratively and regionally in addressing our homeless needs. And again, we have the South County Homeless Task Force as one vehicle for bringing these different needs together as a community. So what's before the council is the adoption of a resolution that would declare a homeless shelter crisis pursuant to the HEAP program. I will note that the language in the resolution is very specific, and that comes from the state. It's a state template where we were allowed to customize a few sentences, but much of the language is given to us by the state because they really wanted to make this consistent across the state. Adoption would enable us to be eligible for the funding and work with the county to best prepare our application and addressing needs as we go forward. With that, I'm glad to take your questions and comments.
Let me see if there's any questions from council members. Any questions to my left? Debbie?
I had just one, and I think you clarified it to some extent. But I remember hearing not long ago that we had 1,500 homeless people in South County, and now we're seeing there are 60 in Grover Beach and a lot less in other five cities areas. So I'm wondering, what are the real numbers, and how do we arrive at those different figures? Anybody have an answer to that one?
I can't speak to the 1,500 number. Perhaps folks from the Five Cities Homeless Coalition can speak further to that. The number of 1,125 is the official number that came out of the county 2017 point-in-time survey that was done across the county. It's done every 2 years, and that was the number that was generated through that process. Each community did have a number that was a subset of that overall number. I will note that the 2019 point-in-time survey is taking place in January 2019.
Okay. Any other?
Maybe somebody can answer that later.
Yeah, I'm thinking, I know I have two speaker requests, so maybe perhaps.
Thank you.
Okay. Any questions to my right? Okay, seeing none, let me open this up to the public. I've got two speaker requests. The first one is Mike Bird, followed by Jana Nichols.
Mike Bird, Five Cities Homeless Coalition. And that was an excellent report, Matt. So I don't need to take up 3 minutes of your time because Matt did a really good job. The only thing that I would add to his report is when he's talking about the quickness that this is going to take place, the money also has to be spent very quickly, you know, especially by government standards. They really put a firecracker under this thing. So it's been really helpful because Grover Beach and the other cities and the county and state parks have been meeting all along planning for this. And so as soon as the application process is open, I think we're going to be ready to go, and we're going to be able to present some things that are going to be very appealing and are going to be able to meet the time parameters, which perhaps some other communities who are lagging further behind may not. So the declaration tonight is really important to that process because we're trying to approach this from a South County regional perspective, and we need the region to all be in on this. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bird. Jana Nichols.
Jana Nichols, Five Cities Homeless Coalition. Pleasure to be with you this evening. I'm here mainly to answer any questions and assist you in kind of trying to navigate the nuances of this. There's a couple things I'd like you to understand about this grant opportunity. The first is we need you to do this in order for us to even engage the conversation, really, in terms of how we would best leverage funds here in South County. Additionally, I think it is important, and I appreciate the city manager's comments, at least $250,000 of this grant has to be spent on unaccompanied youth. And as you know, we are not only dealing with that here throughout the county, but here in South County we have one of the most effective programs being offered currently in the county, and we would like to see that expanded. And, for example, tonight there's a public forum at Cuesta College where I have staff attending to address some of those questions. The county is in a process of trying to develop some opportunities for the public to have more public comment about how these funds would be used. A tentative date for a public forum here in South County has been set for November 7th, and I don't have a specific location yet. I had hoped to have a flyer for you this evening, but we'll certainly be providing that to the city clerk and otherwise to get that out. But there is a public forum plan both in North County and South County to talk on a broader scale with the community about how to move forward on homelessness, et cetera. Councilmember Peterson, to answer your question specifically, on the last point in time count that was done in January 2017, we had 1,515 people across the county identified as homeless, both sheltered and unsheltered. And in that... that was in the 2015 count. In the 2017 count, those numbers were down to 1,125, 359 of whom were identified here in South County. We will be doing another count the last week of January. It's a mandate by HUD that this happen every 2 years, and so we will be mobilizing to do another count. I would ask that you keep in mind it is a point-in-time count, and I'm proud of the fact that we did a highly effective job in reaching out this last time here in South County. I would say that there were some other complications in other parts of the county. So how accurate the number actually is, I'll leave that to you to interpret, but it is the point in time count that we were able to identify at that time. The other thing I would mention to you briefly is that this is one of several grants coming down from the state around homelessness. And I think it's important to kind of understand how this grant fits in some of the other funding sources. As the city manager identified, this is a one-time grant. And so I think you need to be somewhat cautious as we're going forward about programmatic issues versus bricks and mortar versus those sorts of things. The last thing we like to do is to ramp up a program and then have to break it down. So that's one of the things. But this is one of several. There's also a grant called SESH. It's California Emergency Services, an SB2. There's about $700,000 that the county is eligible for there. Again, it's non-competitive to the county, but how it's invested here in the county will be a competitive process, and that too will be part of the public dialogue that the county's hoping to have here in the next week or two. There are a couple of housing-specific grants coming down. One is called Housing for a Healthy California, and the other, which is far more important, is called No Place Like Home, which will be for construction of housing. There's $2 million coming to the county specifically, and then that's non-competitive, and then there's another $20 million that will be available competitively. The key to this funding, the No Place Like Home funding, will be that the county will have to commit to providing supportive services for 20 years, which means and it's specifically targeted to those who are homeless and facing mental illness. So if the housing is constructed through this grant process, then the county in some fashion or another will have to commit to the supportive services to help people maintain their housing. There's a lot coming. And I will also tell you that $4.8 million is not going to solve homelessness in this county, nor anywhere close. But there are a variety of steps. And so I think the question will be ultimately, you know, is this best served in the short term or in the long term? But again, acknowledging that it's a one-time grant.
Thank you.
Any other questions, let me know.
Thank you. Do you have another question?
I have a question about the mental health funds that are coming. I'm wondering if those mental health funds, if we know yet, whether those will also support addictive behaviors, or is it just for other forms of mental health issues?
You know, I think it's specifically for those with mental illness, not specifically for those with, I mean, you aren't necessarily dealing with both issues at the same time. There is actually a ballot initiative on the ballot at this point to the legislation got hung up with a challenge, which is being corrected now on the ballot in November. But it is for specifically for housing. What I will say is that there is a dual diagnosis program currently at CAPSLO at the New 40 Prado. It's called Slow Hub. They've got funding from SAMHSA, and so they are providing a program currently for those who are homeless, who have mental illness, and also an addiction issue for those that want to participate.
Could I ask one more along those lines?
Okay, one more. We got other items we got to get to.
I lost it now. That's okay. I'll ask afterwards.
Well, how about this? So I know the item before us tonight is this homeless shelter crisis declaration, but that's a lot of great information that the council and the community would be interested in, and we'd like to maybe invite you back to come up and do a presentation so that
you can
provide us some information and we can ask as many questions as we like.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Okay.
You're welcome.
Is there anyone else from the community that would like to address this item? Please come forward to the lectern.
Hi, my name's Robert Patterson, and I just wanted to ask the city manager, in one of your slides you had the number of $500 million, and you might want to take a look at that on your slide.
All right. Yeah. It's a lot of money.
Okay.
Okay, so can you clarify that?
Yes,
thank
sir.
You. Thank you for that, Mr. Patterson. So let's get a clarification.
The state budget includes $500 million across the state, some for each county, and then for, I believe, the 10 largest cities in the state. Of that $500 million, Slo County is estimated to receive $4.8 million based on our homeless numbers here in this county.
Very good. Thank you for that clarification. Was there anyone else that wanted to address this item before the council? Okay, seeing no one, let me close it and bring it back to the council. And you guys want to have a discussion, or is this something that someone want to make a motion on?
I'm happy to kind of start off with just a quick comment first and then make a motion. I know, so as a member of the Five Cities Homeless Coalition and members of the task force and CAPSLO and so forth have been working in anticipation of this since the governor's May revise with regards to this. And I know it's going to take a community-wide effort to bring forward the culmination of these resources into the South County, but it does start with the homeless shelter crisis declaration. So with that, I'll make a recommendation that we adopt the resolution declaring a homeless shelter crisis in Grover Beach pursuant to the Homeless Emergency Aid Program under SB 850.
I'll second that, and I wanted to just make a little comment on that.
Hang on a sec. So there's a motion and by Mayor Pro Tem Leah, a second by Councilmember Peterson. Okay, Debbie.
So what I wanted to ask was what ballot measure is that? If it's one up and coming for folks who are watching, they may want to pay special attention to that because it's so relevant to the county, to our county, our city. There was a ballot measure referenced coming up.
Who
I believe it's Proposition 2.
Prop 2.
And the council has gone on record in support of the proposition earlier.
Great. Thank you. And then I also just wanted to add that this city actually adopted a homeless shelter crisis in March 2017. And so I know this is the update that we need to do for future funds, but I did want to commend the city for getting out in front of it on that.
Very good. Anyone else? Any comments?
I had a comment that I would like to update the council as far as the next steps in the process after.
So why don't we, let's do this. There's a motion and a second on the floor. Let's do a roll call, and then I'll come back to you, Councilmember Shaw. Donna?
Mayor Pro Tem Lee?
Yes.
Councilmember Peterson?
Yes.
Councilmember Nichols?
Yes.
Councilmember Shaw?
Yes.
And Mayor Scholes?
Yes. Motion carries 5-0. With that, Councilmember Shaw, you have the floor.
Yes, Matt and I had a good meeting today with Laurel Weir of from the county to kind of walk us through, okay, what are the next steps? And this whole process is coming really so fast in the grand scheme of grants that a lot was even clarified to me that this $4.8 million is what's called non-competitive, meaning if we jump through the hoops that the state is asking us to jump through, knock on wood, this 4.8 is coming to the county. So that's great news. And this last vote was a big piece of it for us. So that's great. And you're going to be hearing about a lot of meetings coming up because part of their process, they have to gather public input. So, you know, please, encouraging people, please attend. You'll hear about these meetings. There's going to be one, as Janice said, November 7th in our area. More dates and times, or more times and locations to come. But then, starting in 2019, then we will start the process together as a South County and even as a city to start to pursue that $4.8 million. Then it becomes, what can we bring to our piece of the world? And so the city manager and I were talking about, you know, at that time, maybe in early 2019, is really a time for after the South County Task Force has talked about what are great ideas, it may be a time for the council to then really bring this issue back here and talk about, you know, what are we going to pursue as a city and as a region to really try now to bring these dollars here to South County. Because, as Jenna stated, 4.8 is not going to cover everyone, and the best we can do is have a very cohesive plan. So more to come.
Okay. So I strongly encourage those next steps, and I certainly encourage the new city council to pursue those items. So, all right. Let's move on to item number 8. This is about traffic safety improvements, and I believe Mr. Ray, are you Public Works Director, and City Engineer Ray, I believe you've given the staff report?
I am. Thank you.
Okay.
Got it. Okay, so thank you, Honorable Mayor and City Council. The item before you tonight, again, is traffic safety improvements. And this is a, you know, somewhat focused item. Council had identified transportation, traffic, and pedestrian safety as a council goal. And so the outline of this item tonight includes some current traffic safety conditions, sort of a snapshot, identification of some areas of concern, and some options to enhance traffic safety, and in particular, pedestrian safety at two areas. There we go. So in 2017, in 2018, over a two-year period, to today, speed surveys were taken based on a mobile radar unit. Looking at West Grand Avenue, you have an 85th percentile speed. That's a measure that is essentially identifying what the majority of drivers are driving at, and it's a speed that you use to set speed limits. So the measured 85th percentile speed was 37 miles per hour on West Grand Avenue, with a posted speed of 35 miles an hour, so you know, reasonable vehicle speeds. There were 31 vehicle-to-vehicle collisions, mostly occurring near Highway 1 and at 4th Street in their intersection with Grand Avenue. We had a zero vehicle-pedestrian collisions on Grand and zero vehicle-bicycle collisions on Grand during that period. South 16th Street measured 85th percentile speed. It was 28.5 miles per hour with a posted speed of 25. Five vehicle-vehicle collisions, and again, zero vehicle-pedestrian or vehicle-bicycle collisions in that area. Focusing on West Grand Avenue at 3rd Street, the city hired Omni Means to study the intersection to improve pedestrian crossing safety. The Omni Means study, which is in your as an attachment to your staff report, the Omni Means study provided some options. They include enhanced crosswalk striping, and you've seen some of that. We just recently did that on South 13th Street. Those are school crossings in particular, but there are other versions of those that would be more appropriate for general pedestrian traffic. Advanced warning signs, that would be your typical pedestrian crossing ahead yellow signs. Could do yield to pedestrian markings and signs directly at the crosswalk. And then the most significant would be a pedestrian-activated beacon. These are the rapid flashing beacons similar to what you see up at Atlantic and North 4th Street. This is a view of that intersection. In particular, the crossing is on the west side of the intersection, crossing Grand Avenue at 3rd Street. You can see a street-level view and an aerial view showing that. One thing I did note in the staff report was that the enhanced pedestrian crosswalk markings could actually conflict with our wave-patterned decorative concrete in this area. So we'd have to kind of think about how that works and maybe come up with a solution that met both objectives. The first three options I spoke to a minute ago are relatively low cost. They could be implemented basically immediately. But I would caution council that selecting all three would likely result in some sign clutter in the area. The block's just not that long. So either, you know, advance warning signs and pedestrian markings, or perhaps not the advance warning signs, do the yield to pedestrians immediately at the crosswalk. Or, again, another consideration could be to do the rapid flashing beacons. Staff has looked at the cost to install those. We believe the total cost, including design, everything would be in the neighborhood of $30,000 to $40,000 for the rapid flashing beacons. So jumping ahead to South 16th Street at Farrell Road, another area that was identified with some pedestrian crossing concerns. Staff, again, went to Omni Means and provided or sought a study of that intersection. Council received that study on August 7th, 2017. That's attachment 2 to your report. At that time, council approved restriping of that intersection to improve corner sight distance. And that's for vehicles basically pulling out into the intersection and trying to make the turn onto Farrell. The Omni Means study did look briefly at the crosswalk conditions, though, and indicated that if a crosswalk were to be installed at the currently uncontrolled intersection, that other items should be considered along with that, and that would be, again, enhanced crosswalk striping, advance warning signs, same as before, the yellow pedestrian crossing ahead signs, perhaps a yield to pedestrian markings right at the crosswalk, or again, the council could consider a pedestrian-activated rapid flashing beacon, again, similar to what you see 4th and Atlantic. This is an aerial view showing that intersection, and there's two views. The top view is before the intersection was restriped to enhance the corner sight distance, and the following down on the bottom is following restriping. You'll note that the traffic lanes were shifted to the south to provide a better view of the vehicles approaching that intersection from the east. So looking still at South 16th and Farrell, basically measured speeds and pedestrian volumes do not meet warrants for installation of all-way stop control at Farrell and South 16th. But the council could provide direction to install stop signs, basically creating a controlled intersection and a safety enhancement for the crosswalk. Staff is recommending an engineering study to document installation of an all-way stop control. That would be similar to the study that was performed for the recent installation of all-way stop control at Trouville and South 16th. So tonight, staff is seeking council direction on traffic safety measures at the two identified intersections. Council could provide direction to staff to consider additional areas and identify approach, and you know, staff would move ahead to identify appropriate measures and provide cost estimates back to the council at a future date. And staff continues to recommend that a long-range approach be considered, wherein a consulting firm would be hired to perform a citywide traffic study, and that could be considered as part of upcoming goal setting and budget process. Looking at the fiscal impact of various decision options this evening, of course, the cost would depend entirely on council's direction. There is a limited budget to implement these traffic safety measures immediately, specifically the rapid flashing beacons. The minimum recommended improvements could be installed immediately without budget adjustments. Those are the signs, and that's not that costly. We estimate the study to implement a full four-way stop control at Farrell and South 16th would be in the range of $5,000 to $10,000. And again, the rapid flashing beacons are estimated to be between $30,000 and $40,000 per location. Staff could return with a recommended funding source and a budget allocation either at mid-year or the next fiscal year budget consideration. And with that, I'll turn it over to council. Be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, let me see if there's any questions. Councilmember Nichols, do you have any questions?
My only question is, why would another study be undertaken, because there was a study done already counting the pedestrians and the speed and so on?
I think that's a valid question. So the study that was undertaken previously really looked at intersection site distance in particular and installation of a crosswalk. And if you're going to install a crosswalk, what safety features would be recommended? It didn't look specifically at installation of a stop sign. So stop sign is an option that council could consider. Again, staff's quick glance at it, it clearly wouldn't meet warrants for installation of a stop sign, but we should go through the warrant study. We should do just like we did on South 16th and Trouville, make sure we have the information on record and that a traffic engineer has provided us the guidance necessary to install a four-way stop control if council is selected to choose that option this evening.
Okay. Jeff, do you have any questions?
I do have a couple, I'll start off by saying this kind of feels a little bit like deja vu, only because I feel we've had some of this conversation, and it's obviously this is perhaps the next level of that conversation. But I'm going to focus on 16th and Farrell first, and wondering if, similar to Councilmember Nichols' question, the study, I mean, it was kind of identified that we're not going to meet those warrants. So can we reuse, and maybe this is a question for the city attorney, can we reuse effectively the elements of Trouville and 16th, was it, am I in the right spot? 16th and Trouville study to say, okay, we know we're not going to meet the warrants. However, there is a park nearby. There's safety enhancements. There's elements. So basically using the results of that study without having to do a specific more specific study at this particular location.
I'll just say that I believe we certainly could go forward. Council could go forward and install the stop signs without doing a further engineering study specifically on the stop sign. That's certainly an action that can be taken. I think in talking about this and looking at what could be done from the last study, what the difference, as I understand it, is that this provides focused work on the stop signs from an immunity standpoint that could provide some additional protections if we are challenged to say that stop sign is not warranted and shouldn't have been put in. If we actually do a focused study on just the topic of stop signs, that does provide some degree of risk mitigation that we can turn to if we're ever challenged on that down the road. So I think building on the model we did with Trueville, where the council approved the study and the stop signs, and we installed them within a matter of weeks afterwards, that's what led us to want to have this additional protection from the standpoint of immunity and being able to be clear about why we're installing stop signs at that street.
I could have said it better myself. I'm going to hire him in my law firm.
Okay, very good.
And yet I'll ask the next question is, from a risk, from a city risk standpoint, the safety in the area, we may make the decision that we want to install stop signs sooner rather than later. Can we provide direction this evening, perhaps to install the signs and then follow it up with a subsequent study to provide that additional layer of risk analysis?
That's an interesting question. I would say, for the most part, it's better to have the study done ahead of time, and that when you actually make that decision, you're doing it with the understanding that you have a policy in place specific to an engineering study that says it's warranted to do that. I haven't researched that issue, so I don't know that I'm hesitant to answer that question without doing a little research, but I can do that and get back to you.
Okay. So then... then I'll switch questions over to Third and Grand in that intersection. I'm hearing we need that same level of study there, maybe I'll say that differently. Is the report has done this. Now we need to make a decision as to what level we're comfortable with going towards. And again, feels like deja vu because I thought we had provided direction to do some of the at street or at grade flashing lights, which is not in this particular set of alternatives anymore.
I believe it is included as part of the rectangular rapid beacons. That is one of the four different options. And the reason we're bringing it back to you, yes, you did provide that. I will say, we didn't know what the cost would be. Now we know it's $30,000 to $40,000 for installation of those beacons. Now, certainly, we can go forward and do that, but we wanted, before we just jumped into it, given that cost amount, we wanted to bring that back to the council and to say, since it's not budgeted, we have to find funds elsewhere in the budget to cover that. Is that still your preferred direction to go forward? And if so, great. We'll go forward and do that and then find the funds to be able to cover that. But before we assume that, we wanted to check with you first.
Okay. Understood. Okay. And then notwithstanding these two specific areas, I think after we do this discussion, I'd like to have a kind of the larger discussion of other locations, 7th and Grand, where we have had vehicular and pedestrian, Margarita, where we may need some speed tables, some other locations where there's other identified locations to
okay.
Review.
Well, let me see if there's questions of staff. One, then we're going to go to the community. We'll come back. We have further discussion. Okay.
I have a couple. If we do the study just on the stop sign on Farrell, how much would that study cost?
That's estimated to be between $5,000 and $10,000.
Okay, and then. One aspect that we're looking at Farrell is the possibility of a crosswalk or stop sign, but then the other thing we're looking at there is just the visibility issue that it sounds like we're not going, because we tried to fix that with the striping, but it sounds like the visibility, is that just looking at the old study, or is the visibility still, as it says in the study, not up to par?
So the study that OmniMeans prepared for South 16th and Farrell indicated that stopping sight distance was acceptable, that the only issue was corner sight distance, and that corner sight distance was addressed by the restriping. So there are no sight distance issues remaining. What remains is simply the question about installing a four-way stop sign.
Okay. Oh, okay, because... Yeah, that's what I was a little bit confused, I think, when I read that. So that study was before we did the striping to remedy the situation.
That is correct.
Okay. From a visibility side,
the visibility
this is a heightened enhancement that the council has not directed on thus far, but we're bringing it back to you to see if that's where you want to go. And if so, this is what we recommend in order to help us get there.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll be interested to hear other people's comments on that.
Councilmember Peterson.
So now I'm confused. So are we saying that we've already corrected the site distance issues by making some changes that we had approved earlier? Mm-hmm. So in this report, yes. The site distance is no longer the issue. The only question is stop sign or not stop sign?
The question of site distance, corner site distance, has been resolved. I've still heard people have found it challenging there, but from a purely mathematical standpoint, the shifting of the lanes meets the minimum requirement for corner site distance. What's really before you is would you like to install a crosswalk? And then, if so, would you like to install enhancements to make that crosswalk more visible, more likely to be adhered to by motorists? And then ultimately, if council would like to, you could take away the issue of a crosswalk at an uncontrolled intersection and make it a controlled intersection, even though, as indicated earlier, it may not meet or most likely does not meet warrants for installation of always stop control.
Okay, thank you. And I wanted to go back to the 3rd Street crossing, and on the numbers that the average speeds between, I believe it was around 3rd Street, were, I think, 35 miles an hour. It seems incredibly high when you consider that just a few, couple hundred feet away, they're stopping for the train tracks and the lights. Is that a maximum speed that gets reached? Or it just, I don't know how you could even go 35 to 40 miles through there with this, and then traffic is stopped there and backed up sometimes. So that didn't make a lot of sense to me.
So traffic speeds are measured as free-flowing traffic speeds. Mm-hmm. That would mean under conditions where there's not a train crossing or where the light is green at Highway 1. Your speed limits are set based really primarily on the 85th percentile speed. If we were to set the speed limit today, it would be 35 miles an hour.
Okay, thank you.
Based on that measurement.
And another question, and maybe some of the other council members can remember me on this. The study was done on a Tuesday, and I know that's standard operating procedure. I think the times where it feels most frightening and dangerous is at the weekends, especially in the summer when it's busy, and it is, from my experience, getting busier. And so has there been any study of what the volume is, peak volume on a summer, on an average summer day or a summer weekend?
We're talking about 3rd Street?
3rd Street, yeah.
The summer pedestrian volume?
All the volumes are based on a Tuesday. And I know it's a 24 hours. There's a length of time there. But that's not when it's difficult. The difficult times with lots going on and lots of distractions and lots of people going out to the restaurant is going to be weekends in the summer, which I think is most likely to be a more dangerous time. That's when the perception's occurring that it's dangerous.
I think that's a good comment. It's if you really look at the guidance for installation of vehicular markings, signs, pavement markings, crosswalks, flashing lights, signals, stop signs, all that, the FHWA provides the majority of that guidance through what's called the Manual of Uniform Traffic Control Devices, and the traffic measurements that you take to follow their guidance are typically weekday 24-hour counts. Mm-hmm. Taking all their studies and all their guidance are based on those numbers, so they take into account that there's likely higher volumes on the weekends if you're a tourist destination, things like that would be contemplated in following through their guidance. But generally, all counts are taken weekday, 24-hour counts.
Okay. And then my other question, this is the one I thought folks might be able to help me with. I remember there was always one night of the week where my family wanted to go out to Spoon Trade, and it was always closed. Was that a Tuesday or was it Wednesday? I think they're open all nights now, but if it was a Tuesday, then this study is not real effective. I don't remember, though.
You know, again, the study is, I mean, the pedestrian volumes are really, from a traffic engineering standpoint, really low. And they're very, very low.
If Spoon Trade's closed, they're very low.
But thank you. That's not a question.
Right.
That's not the answer she's looking for. I think it used to be like a Wednesday.
I think it was Wednesday, too. Okay, thank you for clarifying.
I don't have any questions. I'll have comments. So let me open this up and see if there's anyone from the community that would like to address this item. I don't have any speaker request forms, but I certainly want to make sure we give everyone an opportunity to speak on this item. Sharon, Anita? Either way, you guys work it out.
Good evening, Anita Schauer. Would you go back to the first slide that you presented, Mr. Ray, because I think there's a mistake. Back one. Back one more, please. Because we had a fatality the first night of Stone Soup last year, and I believe that's from 2017-2018. West Grand Avenue, it says vehicle-pedestrian collisions, none, and we had one. Thank you.
Thank you. Sharon?
Sharon Brown, Grover Beach. As most of you know, I use my walker when I'm walking, and I have had occasion to master or try to master both of these intersections. Guess what? I don't go there anymore. It is far too dangerous for me on a walker to try to cross, especially when part of that intersection is blind. Drivers can't see you. They tend to ignore you anyway when you're on a walker. I have found that. Yes, people do pick up their speed coming off the beach. Yep. I have seen it. Anyway, I think that we have to look at the pedestrians as well as the automobiles. Also, we're saying the pedestrian traffic in that area of 3rd and Grand is not that great. Is that what we really want? We have businesses there. Don't we want foot traffic for these businesses? We don't have parking down there very much. So how are we going to support these businesses? So I think we need to look at those things, too.
Thank you, Sharon. Is there anyone else? If not, I'm going to close this to the public and bring it back to the council. So let me exercise chair's prerogative and move us forward. I know that everyone's got comments. And I can't add on. I always enjoy the comments Sharon Brown makes, it because they're usually right on point. The fact is, 3rd Street, it's businesses down there, limited parking. I've observed many pedestrians trying to cross and cars either not seeing them, choosing not to stop. This is all about pedestrian safety. And we've made a huge investment down there, and we always say safety first. I say the same thing on Farrell Road. As someone who goes through that intersection multiple times daily, who observes folks going through that intersection many times, we've got a very active city park. We've got some recent residential development on the north side of Farrell. Yes, we dealt with the visibility, but the issue of pedestrian safety, children's safety, we did this on, I want to say, Trueville and South 16th, and so I think the same argument holds here. So I would just throw something out for everyone to react to. on West Grand Avenue, to me, it makes sense, and I appreciate staff bringing up the issue of sign pollution. It's one of the things that drives me to distraction, and we really got to figure out what to do about some of the other signs on Grand Avenue, and that's a discussion for another day. But I do want to give them credit for at least acknowledging that. I would suggest that maybe we look at West Grand Avenue at 3rd, we talk about number items 3 and 4, which is to have the yield to pedestrian markings and signage at the crosswalk, and then 4 would be the rapid flashing beacons. I think those two combinations would address that. I would then also suggest that on South 16th Street at Farrell that we look at an enhanced crosswalk striping and then a yield to pedestrian markings and signage, because even though we may have addressed minimally the site visibility, cars are still coming through there at a pretty rapid rate of speed, and anything we can do to enhance public safety, and if it's creating a four-way stop sign, a four-way stop, that'd be great. And if staff, did you say this could be done, the study and everything could be done in 2 or 3 weeks? Did I hear that correctly?
We would do the study very promptly to be able to bring this back to the council as quickly as we could, so that you could improve the stop sign and be able to move that forward. I couldn't commit to the 2 to 3 week period for the study, but I think we would move forward immediately and be able to get this on your agenda soon.
So I think you know me. Bottom line is, I think Mayor Tim was right. This feels like deja vu all again. Let's take some action. And I would just say, if we have to have a special meeting in November, I know that we had canceled the meeting that was right before election night, and for good reason. But maybe we need to find another date to give direction, because it sounds like you need direction on funding. And I think if that's something that you need to do as far as a mid-year adjustment, we need to take action, because I think all of us have been down at that end of the Grand and witnessed people trying to cross that crosswalk and people not seeing them. So anyway, those are my comments. And I'm just one person on this council, and I just wanted to put that out there and let everyone react to it. City Manager, do you have something?
Just with regard to the funding, I mean, what I would say is if your direction is to go forward with items that do have a funding commitment, I would just build that into our mid-year review process and mid-year budget process, and be able to bring that back to you as we look at our mid-year budget.
Well, I'm saying the mid-year is November, before November 19th or whatever the heck. So the Third and Grand is critical. It needs to be done. And I don't think any of us, we all want some action. So I think if there's money in the budget, we can do that now, as opposed to going through some cumbersome process that we don't need to. Like I said, I'm one person. Let me let everyone else jump in here. Mayor Pro Tem.
Yeah, maybe with that particular talk about Third and Grand first, I'm seeing, if I'm understanding the staff report correctly, that we can do items 3 and 4 for approximately in the $30,000 to $40,000 budget item. So going to your conversation of getting this done sooner rather than later, if we authorize staff to spend up to $50,000 from a budget source that the city manager will bring back to us at a future date, authorization to spend it in advance of that to get those improvements done, I think I'd be in supportive of some identifying discussion of that nature.
That sounds like a great motion. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
If anybody could understand how I said that, I will put it into a motion, certainly.
I have a question about the suggestion of the slow pedestrian crossing signage. Wouldn't that be as inexpensive as a stop sign or something like that to put mid-block?
On Farrell and South 16th?
No, Third and Grand. Where you're coming off the freeway or you're coming from 4th Street, either direction, the crosswalks are already the designed crosswalks. They're very visible. Mm. There's no line of sight problem with seeing a pedestrian in there. And so I'm thinking just a reminder at the beginning, either right after the 4th Street stoplight or the highway stoplight, just slow pedestrian crossing ahead.
Okay.
Mm. That seems to me to be one of the cheapest ways to do it.
Were you done? Yeah, I think you had more comments.
I was just going to keep my comments to Third and Grand at the moment, but maybe I'm misunderstanding. I mean, there's no talk of a stop sign.
Not at Third and Grand.
Oh,
no.
Good. Okay, gotcha. Because I thought I'd heard that from somebody. So, Greg, could you put up the picture of the Third and Grand intersection now, if you would, please? So, if I'm, and not to monopolize the conversation, but if I'm hearing John correctly and what and or the mayor correctly, what my recommendation is as well is to put in the pedestrian markings, which would be the slow pedestrian crossings in advance of the crosswalks, right, as well as the rectangular rapid flashing
exactly
in the probably what would be the yellow, excuse me, the white border, either before or after, depending upon the direction, so as we're not obscuring our wave pattern. Is that the what 3 and 4 achieves?
I think I should clarify something. I think I've heard you comment that you're talking about the rapid flashing beacons in the pavement?
Correct.
What we presented for discussion this evening is actually rapid flashing beacons on the sign.
Okay, so that's different than what the city manager told us earlier.
I think that might have been
some confusion.
I thought
our previous conversation was flashing in the pavement.
I don't recall that, sir. We've actually moved away from that technology because they are not able to be maintained very easily. So the ones on Atlantic City are also on the signpost, and that's what is the industry standard of doing such flashing beacons today. And that's what we would be looking to do here as well.
Okay, so I guess I'm...
Let's just get it done.
Yep, yeah. Okay, so so item 3 and 4 is nothing in the pavement, flashing beacons on either side of Grand Avenue, of the sidewalks with signage. So, I mean, based upon comment, I mean, I've seen the paving markers previously, but for the purposes of moving forward, I'll make a motion that we proceed with items 3 and 4 for 3rd and Grand at a not to exceed maximum of $50,000 budget.
Hold on, I think you're. I need to cut to the left.
I need to understand what this is, because I never thought it was in the ground, because I do know those break so easily, and I think we did, even the ones in AG are broken. But are we looking at what's at Atlantic City and 4th? Is that what we're talking about putting in?
Yes, but not everything that's Atlantic City and 4th. So if you recall the original installation at Atlantic City and 4th, there were in-pavement
right
flashing mm-hmm lights. And then in advance of those, there are yellow flashing lights well in advance. That's strictly adhering to MUCCD guidance to have because of the speeds on 4th mm-hmm Street. The in-street lights failed.
Right.
And the company went out of business promptly thereafter. So we're moving more toward, and MUCCD guidance appears to be moving more toward what you now see that we replace them with, and those are signposts mm-hmm that say yield to pedestrians, and at the bottom is a very high-intensity flashing beacon that flashes both directions of approach.
Yes, and I use that area a lot, and I walk a lot in that area, and I will say that's very effective, but this might be a different situation, because one reason that's very effective is because you can see it from a long way off. Like now, the problem from 3rd to Highway 1 is you have so little notice, and then even by the time you may be under that sign before you even know, mm-hmm, I'm just not sure if it will have the same effectiveness that it has on 4th and Atlantic City.
So specifically, if I may, Mayor,
well,
I was just going to say that's specifically what the study was to analyze. So.
Yeah, do you want to respond to that? Absolutely.
Yeah, the Omni Means study, that's what they looked at. Is there anything in addition that we would need to do? There's a great document that came out from the federal government on installation of rapid flashing beacons and pedestrian-activated crosswalk controls, and that's why we asked them to do this. Is this the right approach? Is there sight distance issues? Are there impediments? Should we be removing parking? They looked at all of that. And so it is a recommended approach per Omni Means study.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilmember Peterson?
One of the other things that I read in there somewhere was that it might be an idea to put that on that middle island where you see the U-turn sign there. And I live at that intersection, and I have for, I don't know, 7 years now. And so it is getting more and more busy and more difficult. And part of the problem is that there are distractions everywhere. You know, there are the businesses. There's people on bikes. There's people walking with strollers. And there's so many things to watch out for, you just can't do it all. And so I like the idea of making it as visible as possible, and I think out in the middle is where it will be most, it's isolated out there, and there's nothing else not as much competing. I agree with the suggestions that have been made by the other council members and the mayor. And I also just to support our argument here, you know, we talk about historically have there been accidents. We're talking about getting out in front of this. We're not talking about history. This is what's happening now, and we're not at history anymore. Now we're at a really busy, thriving intersection that needs us as a council to take responsibility and get out in front of it. So, and it's only going to get busier. So I'm also wondering about the option of pedestrian-activated lights. I kind of like the idea of the pedestrians also taking responsibility for their safe crossing, but I'm not cognizant of the relative costs to that as well. So that would be a factor. And then they suggested more lighting at night, and I certainly know that that's something that we've all talked about a lot. And you know, when ladies go out at night, we usually wear black. We wear dark colors, and so I'm thinking more lighting at night is wise. Oftentimes I've crossed that street and thought, oh, my gosh, I shouldn't have worn black tonight.
Great.
That's it.
Good comments, everyone. So, all right. I've really tried to be patient. I'm just amazed. I've lived in San Luis Obispo County for 30-plus years. They have these mid-block crosswalks in San Luis Obispo, which lights up the street. And I can assure you that the traffic that's traveling in those are probably 4 to 5 times greater than what we have here. So how do we get to this? How do we get to this point? And the flashers are good, and I think since obviously that's something that we studied, that's something we can deal with tonight, but I think we need to give direction and to do more. We need to do more because I can tell you people coming off that beach, they are not looking, they're not going to look to the sides. People who are heading to the beach they're looking past a train station trying to get to the beach. Mm-hmm. So any and everything we can do to improve pedestrian safety is paramount. So it is a little disappointing that we've talked about lighting up the crosswalk like what we had on South 4th. I don't know what the issue was there. I just don't understand how other cities can do it. And then for us, it's like this major issue. If money's an issue, let the council know and we can find the dollars. I don't understand how we're sitting here having this discussion without all the options on the table tonight.
It would have been helpful too to have some diagrams of what these signs look like, because I agree with the sign clutter and more distractions, and I agree that we need at least a sign or two to warn people about pedestrians. And so that would be helpful if we could visualize what some of these things look like.
Got it. So you had a motion on the table. Did you want to modify your motion or provide some additional direction?
I guess from that perspective, I'll try speaking again and see if I can succinctly put it into words. So I'll make a motion that we direct staff to proceed with installation of enhanced pedestrian improvements on West Grand Avenue at 3rd Street, consistent with items number 3 and 4, item number 3 being yield to pedestrian markings and signage located at the crosswalk, and 4 being rectangular rapid flashing beacons activated by pedestrian push buttons, with an anticipated budget of approximately $50,000 in a location to be determined to be brought back at a mid-year budget review.
So no interest in putting the sensors in the street?
Skip direction. Yes, I do, but I'm hearing from staff that that's not an option here. So if we provide that direction, I want to see something installed. So if we install these, we can always provide a different direction.
Well, let's do that tonight.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I think that's the third part of this conversation.
Okay.
So I'll leave the motion at that for the moment.
I'll second that, and with kind of the caveat that we'll review and come back and say, look at street lights again later perhaps as another safety thing, and look at the flashing lights in the street if need be. So I'm happy to second that.
All right, so we're just going to do these separately. So there's a motion and there's a second. I think there needs to be direction to to come back.
I just have one item of discussion on that before we vote. I am supportive of the motion and researching. I thought, and I maybe because I live over by the Atlantic City and Fourth, that I city manager and I have talked many times of how this the beacons in the street just don't work and they break. And I do think the ones in downtown AG have been broken for a long time. But if those are still on the table, then I'm a little concerned about going forward with this because then that could be too much or very redundant. So I'm not sure.
From the perspective of my motion, I think 3 and 4 gives us an opportunity to advance this concern and address it immediately.
Okay.
I think the addition of the in-pavement cross flashers is something that if we don't do it at this location, and it works, we do it at other locations as well.
Okay.
So, I mean, I don't want to get into flashing light pollution either. but yeah, I think my motion moves this forward.
I have a concern with that as well. Most of the businesses between 3rd and the highway aren't open at night after 8 o'clock, are they?
Up till 10, the restaurants.
I thought Spoon Tree closed quite early after dinner.
And then we got daylight savings coming, too.
Oh, so yeah, it's the Christmas season's coming up.
Okay.
Okay. All right, there's a motion and a second on the floor. Let's do a roll call. This is only on West Grand Avenue and 3rd Street.
Mayor Pro Tem Lee.
Yes.
Councilmember Peterson.
Yes.
Councilmember Nichols.
Yes.
Councilmember Shaw?
Yes.
And Mayor Scholes?
Yes. All right. Let's move on to South 16th Street in Farrell. I think that was when we talked about having it enhanced crosswalks, driving, and then the yield to pedestrian markings and signage to give some early warning.
I would just say if we're going to add a crosswalk, that we have to add a stop sign. Because I think it's dangerous to add anything encouraging people to cross at that point without a stop sign. And I would be in favor of the stop sign because I've actually heard from people that the speeds on Farrell are getting really high because that is such a long stretch without a stop sign that could also help with some of that. So okay. I'd be in favor of the stop sign and a crosswalk.
And I support that. What I'm hearing from people is, we want a stop sign, we want a stop sign, we want a stop sign, we want a stop sign. And so I'm inclined to, I go with that.
Okay. Anything to my right?
I agree with that.
I'd be inclined to proceed with that as well. With the question to staff of, was the traffic study for this component $5,000 to $10,000 as well for the stop sign study?
That is in particular what we were estimating, yes.
Okay. So then if we proceed with that, do we know or what can we expect from a construction installation cost estimate for enhanced sidewalks and stop signs?
From an installation standpoint, just of a stop sign plus
crosswalk.
Advance?
Yeah, if we provide direction tonight to proceed with the study, and then depending upon the results of the study, whether it has to come back to us or not, what are we looking at from a budget standpoint?
You're in the neighborhood of like $5,000.
So
yeah, it's not an expensive item.
Okay, so I'm hearing a $5,000 of install, $5,000 to $10,000 for the study. So, I mean, from that perspective, am I hearing from city attorney that we need to come back to basically approve the stop sign based upon the study?
That's correct. What I would recommend and what on page 2 of the staff report, it recommends is doing a study first. Okay. Have the study established whether there's sufficient warrants for doing that, then bring that back, approve that study formally by the council, and then go forward with the construction.
And so is that something that could be done at our November meeting?
The next meeting is scheduled. That's is November 19th, and I think with this direction, we would work with OmniMeans immediately to get that study done as quickly as possible. I'll talk to the city engineer and public works director about timing of that. Once council approves the study and stop sign, it's installed very shortly after that.
Okay.
One other comment on this. I think the reason Farrell's so important is because it's the gateway between AG and all kinds of other connector streets for our industrial area, which is going to get busier and busier and have more and more and more trucks and distribution and deliveries. And so I think that's a really good reason to do something for safety there. On the other hand, I do want a stop sign there, but we have to remember it's a truck route too, isn't it? So I don't know how that plays in to put a stop sign on a truck route. Is it the rest of the council isn't too concerned about that?
I'm not concerned about it. I mean, there's a long stretch between 13th to 16th and then to Oak Park. I don't think it would discourage trucks from moving.
Okay. Well, and we've taken out the speed bumps now. We've fixed the streets. So.
There you go. Yep. And then I would so we need to have a motion. And then I would just – staff, and I know I didn't give you any warning ahead of this. Where are our reserves at? Do we know where reserves are? Do we know if there are other projects that are not going to be accomplished in this fiscal year? Because I think we want to give – let's just give direction. And I think you talked about this earlier, so if you want to put that in motion, do that. Okay?
Cool. So there are two questions that I heard in that statement. First question on reserves. We are bringing an item to your council at the next meeting to discuss our year-end review from last fiscal year and the first quarter review for this year. We are still crunching all the numbers for that. I think you adopted a budget that had an ending reserve this year of 20%. We'll kind of look at the numbers for year-end and see if we're somewhere at 20 or somewhere a little bit below that. So I don't have the number right now, but somewhere around that percentage is what we're looking at. And then with regards to other projects, we are busy expending dollars on other projects that you've approved in the capital budget, including parking lots, including wayfinding signs, including tree maintenance. And so we're busy on that capital program right now. We'll come back to you a later date on any projects that we perhaps are not spending the dollars on or can be deferred if need be.
So I'm going to take a wild guess. The community would love to spend their money because it's their money. It's all of our money. It's not this council's money to improve their safety. And if we have to go a little below the 20% reserves to have some action, then I say we do that.
Amen.
And with that, I will proceed with a motion and see if I craft it correctly. I'll make a motion that for the South 16th at Farrell Road intersection, that we direct staff to proceed with a appropriate traffic study to determine the applicability the applicability of installing stop signs at that intersection for consideration by the council. Along with enhanced crosswalk striping and yield to pedestrian markings and signage as necessary at that intersection, with a budget a budget of approximately $20,000 at a location to be determined again by the city manager in the future.
Okay.
I'll second that one.
There's a second. There's a motion and a second. Any discussion on the motion? Okay. Donna, roll call, please.
Mayor Pro Tem Lee.
Yes.
Councilmember Peterson.
Yes.
Councilmember Nichols.
Yes.
Councilmember Shaw.
Yes.
And Mayor Scholes.
Yes. Motion carries. I'm just going to say this. I'm a person who believes in praising in public and, making somewhat, I'm not going to say negative comments, but certainly coaching in private. But I just feel compelled that I need to say this, City Manager and Mr. Ray, that as I leave this council, and I know others will continue to serve on this council, it is extremely disappointing to have an item brought to us with not all the options laid out. And I'm really talking about South West Grand and 3rd Street. It bothers me to no end. It's the analogy of I pay for TV that's got 600 channels and someone screens it and tells me we got three options tonight. We expect more. Okay, so with that, what do you got?
We can either have the conversation before break or after break with regards to other potential considerations of either areas of traffic safety or save it for our for a goal setting?
I have one too.
Well, let's have a little bit of discussion on that, because I did, and I was trying to figure out how to be disciplined in my comments, because I know we had a fatality. It was on West Grand, and I want to say it was either 6th or 7th. And then there was also one on North 4th, and I want to say it was Brighton or Ramona. And so I know we had looked at all this in a much more comprehensive study. So,
yeah, that was a question I had, because one option that was in the staff report, or that I think you mentioned in your report, was a citywide traffic study. And I was wondering what that would mean, because, for example, whenever someone brings up, 7th and Grand, or someone emailed me this morning about North 12th and Atlantic City, then we always say, we have to go back and do a traffic study. So if we went and did this citywide study, would that mean that every time someone kind of brought something up, we'd have a study to refer to and we could skip that step?
I'm not sure. I think what I'm certain we could be successful at is having a traffic engineer evaluate all of our major streets, our arterials and collectors, and identify locations where we should today or as soon as possible be thinking about traffic safety improvements. That would be for pedestrians and bikes. That's the more straightforward and easy side of that. The question becomes if, for example, say they just pick any street, 4th Street, and they said you need to do improvements at these following intersections. Then somebody came in and picked an intersection that they hadn't considered. We wouldn't have an answer for that additional intersection. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean that we couldn't do improvements at that one. It just means that we didn't study it.
Okay.
So I don't think you can study every intersection, but I think what you'd be looking for from a global approach is, the council aren't traffic engineers. I don't, spend every day driving in the community as much as even some of you do. A traffic engineer could find those locations based on speeds and volume of traffic and say, these are areas you should be thinking about next.
Okay.
And Miriam, thank you for bringing that up, because I think we do need to talk about a citywide study. I think there was an opportunity for funding through SLOCOG, but we hadn't done a study akin to this, and that would help going forward if there are funds that come available. So that's a future discussion.
And I think in advance of in addition to intersections, though, we do need to look at we've kind of touched on the subject in past council meetings with regards to traffic calming, and the fact that as we continue to do our Measure K14 improvements, our speeds are going to increase on Trouville, on Margarita, on 4th, on any number of our streets. And so our residents and anybody visiting are going to be desirous of trying to figure out how we improve the safety aspects of those areas as well. So, I mean, I think we've got to stay ahead of it, as Councilmember Peterson said.
The other thing that I've heard a lot about and experienced myself twice in the last 2 weeks is bicycles on the sidewalks. Mm-hmm. And twice I've had to step back up into a storefront to not get hit by a bicycle.
So,
they say they're sorry, but sorry doesn't count when you get knocked over.
So I think that's a discussion that needs to be had. I'm pretty certain bicycles are governed by California Motor Vehicle Codes, and anyone that is over 12 that's riding on a sidewalk should be cited. I understand that we have limited resources out there, but it's for too long we've had folks who are on these sidewalks riding, causing unsafe situations, coming into intersections, riding the opposite direction.
That's where it gets
so I think that's a discussion of where we want to focus resources. So I agree.
Yeah, and maybe this goes toward our 2019 goal setting, because I know traffic calming's been it's been on our goal list now, especially since that fatality, and we've just had so many priorities that sometimes I feel like it's the squeaky neighborhood that gets the stop sign, which is wonderful, but we still have 7th and Grand, and we still have certain things hanging out there, and maybe it's even, having a public forum that's just about bring us your traffic concerns and really getting lots of people's opinions on lots of different areas and really trying to do a more global something more global in the coming year.
Fair enough. And I want to be fair to staff. I know there's been a lot on your plate this year. We've gotten a lot accomplished. I would just say if there are opportunities where this council needs to provide more resources, I think that's a discussion that needs to be had. And I know that the city manager has generally been very good at doing that. So I would suggest keep doing that, because if we're not, if that just, it's not brought back to the council and you're saying, hey, we don't have the resources to do these things, then we're going to assume you've got the resources and that the expectation is that it's going to be done. So I think with that, that's enough. I think we beat that item to death. We still have to get to item, I think, number eight, this or nine. Nine, this is a street rehabilitation update and policy direction on major city street improvements. Mr. Ray, you have the floor.
Thank you. So kind of a starting out with a brief update or status check on our Major K project. This is year four of what was a 15-year project, including $48 million of resident-funded bonds. Six projects are now complete. It's 154 blocks. I think we're right at the 40% mark. So in year four, we're at the 40% mark of a 15-year project, moving pretty quickly. Construction of Newport Avenue east of Oak Park Boulevard is started. Newport Avenue from 4th Street to Oak Park Boulevard is in design. It's proving to be an interesting challenge, but it is in design, and we're rapidly moving toward a completed design on that. You can see a pretty good look here of Long Branch. It's now complete. That's a street that was narrowed, added bike lanes, significant striping, and I think it personally looks great. It's nice to see that one done. You can see from the overhead here, this is the other end of Long Branch, another section that was completed, and you see additional striping and paving done here. There's sort of the before on the left and the after on the right. Some other street work that's been completed, the Oak Park Boulevard rehab was done in 2016. That was from West Grand to Highway 101. And South 4th Street between Seabright and Farrell Road was completed in 2017. And so now looking ahead with your Major K funds, the Phase 8, it's CIP 2295-8, which includes portions of Parkview, Atlantic, Beckett, North 1st, 2nd. That project is in front of us. We have, we're moving forward on that project as we speak. South 16th Street is in the queue. We anticipate to start design in fiscal year 18-19. Next project behind that will be Manhattan Avenue, Seabright, 11th, all around Grover Beach Elementary there. And then moving to 14th Street, a segment between Atlantic and Farrell, well, it's really all of it, and then North 8th Street from Atlantic to West Grand, which would complete 8th, north and south, and Ramona Avenue and 10th Street. So these are the projects that have been laid out by council. They're in my work program now to get done. And like I said, we're moving rapidly forward on 2295-8, and we'll be moving forward soon on 2295-9, which will be your South 16th. This map also is an attachment in your staff report. So if this, it always shows up pretty small in here if it's not terribly visible. But I mean, I think even in a distance, you can see that the red or the green and the blue lines indicate work that's been done. We're filling it in. That map is becoming pretty dense, and there's not a lot of streets that. You can't go for too many blocks without seeing a street that's done now. So you can kind of see where the work has been focused. Blue lines are in construction or in design. Green, solid green are completed, full reconstruction. And the dash lines indicate where significant maintenance has been done with your Major K funds. Jumping to Newport in particular, council provided direction to expand on the option included narrowing the street. This project will include a unique buffered bike lanes on both sides and bulb outs at all the corners for traffic calming, as council was discussing earlier. Like I said, the final design is currently underway, and we believe that construction can begin in spring of 2019. Looking at major street rehabilitation, which is really the focus of this report, the 18-19 budget includes $626,000 of funding for major streets. $300,000 of that is Senate Bill 1 funding. The prioritized streets per the council's direction are South Oak Park, West Grand Avenue, North 4th Street, El Camino Real, Farrell Road, and the Pike. Previous council direction was to, you know, consider South Oak Park. The funding available, the $626,000, is sufficient for between 2 and 4 blocks, but that depends significantly on the extent of the rehabilitation selected. At the August 20, 2018 council meeting, staff provided the list of potential projects to the council, and council provided direction back to develop cost estimates for full rehabilitation and or grind and overlay work for selected streets. That information is in your staff report, and here's a chart showing the cost estimates for each. South Oak Park Boulevard from Grand Avenue to Mentone is estimated for full-depth rehab to cost in the neighborhood of $1.5 million. That's basically $300,000 per block. Grind and overlay total cost would be about half that, $800,000, with a cost per block, again, roughly half, $161,000. North 4th Street from Grand to Ocean View, estimated total cost roughly the same, $1.58 million, $226,000 per block. We did a grind and overlay on that. That would be $832,000 or $119,000 per block. Council had also asked us to look at South 4th Street. There had been some complaints received from residents about the condition of South 4th Street. Remind council it's somewhat a unique situation that portions of that street are underwater virtually every year. And so it's a very difficult pavement section to develop that would survive that. However, we have an exemplary project. The Grover Beach train station is being constructed in areas of very high groundwater. So we believe construction to make a street, build a street down there that would survive that would be very similar. And based on that, we developed a cost estimate to do from Highland to the city limits, that's Highland South, on South 4th Street would be $1.18 million, or roughly $600,000 per block. Also, we looked at Grand Avenue, and the estimated cost from Oak Park to 11th is $2.15 million for full-depth rehab at roughly $300,000 per block, and a grind and overlay would be almost $1 million for that segment and $137,000 per block. I would remind council that a full-depth rehab has a 20-plus year life expectancy. Grind and overlay, you're looking at a neighborhood of 7 years. So that, I can come back to the slide later, but I'll move on. So, again, there's approximately $626,000 allocated. There is an additional $26,000 of development impact fee funding that's available, but that has to be specifically used on South Oak Park. And that's the way the DIF was developed. Again, this funding is sufficient for 2 blocks of full-depth rehab or 4 to 5 blocks of grind and overlay. Staff is seeking direction on expending funds on either full-depth rehab or grind and overlay, and council could also provide direction to identify and allocate additional funding if council selected to do a larger segment. With that, I'll turn it back to council. I think I'll just step back to the slide that had the cost estimates.
Thank you for that staff report. Let me see if there's questions to my left.
I don't have questions. I'll probably have comments.
Okay. And to my right?
No.
No questions? Jeff?
I do have one question, and I think I'll start just by saying, as the mayor said earlier, I think this is an item where staff has really and the overall measure K14 has done amazing things to advance the program and accelerate it based upon community input and council direction. So with that, my question for you, Greg, tonight is a design for the full depth rehab of South Oak Park to Grand, from Grand to Mentone. What would the approximate design cost be?
Well, we've been seeing design costs, assuming, you know, not a lot of edge work, as in handicap ramps, sidewalks, other things. Our design costs have been in the neighborhood of 15% of the total construction cost. So you're looking at, you know.
Okay, so we could have, and hypothetically, if we've got the approximately 626 for work on major streets, we would have enough to proceed with design for South Oak Park from Grant to Mentone, and then potentially provide additional direction to secure alternate funding either through SLOCOG from a regional standpoint mm-hmm. or something there versus a grind and overlay, which is only going to get us that 5 to 7 years that you indicated. So there would be adequate funds if we wanted to design South Oak Park from Grand to Mentone in what we have available.
I would say so, yes.
Okay. So, yeah, I'll have comments as well, but those are that's my question.
Okay.
Could I ask one question?
Sure.
Sorry. Just going back to the update on the streets, the K-14 streets, three streets that people have been saying to me are Ramona, which I was happy to see that is in our upcoming streets, and Baden and Nice are two that people have brought up to me. And I was wondering, because I just couldn't remember, I know we were trying to kind of avoid some of the streets that have waterline improvements or things like that. Is that why Baden and Nice haven't quite made the list? I just wasn't sure.
Just off the top of my head, I couldn't say that I know that. Okay. I could probably look it up, but I don't know. I know that we laid out a lot of streets here, and we were doing those in blocks of roughly $1 million. So.
Yeah, next time we visit this, it would be helpful, too, to see the map with the proposed ones as well, because I just want to make sure that no area is too much left out, or just so I can keep people updated with a visual would be good, too. It'll look great. I mean, I think we've touched almost everything. So, all right, thank you.
I want to tag along onto that, because what I'm hearing from people is that they would really like to see Grand Avenue to Longview, Long Branch, just because it's such a busy corridor and it is still a commercial corridor there, and it's the corridor where you get the transient travel. And one of the things that the businesses have noticed is that if the nicer things look, the less likely it is to have as much transient activity. And so there's been a really big request from folks who live in that area and have businesses there. Please, could we do those two blocks?
Which two blocks was that?
Grand on South 9th from Grand to Long Branch.
I thought the count we had given staff that direction to include that with one of the groupings. And I think that's some of the confusion tonight is that I know staff is trying to give us an update on K-14, but you're really looking for direction on major streets, which we cannot use dollars from K-14 on. So I think that's maybe causing a little bit of the confusion. It's good to have a summary, but I think next time, I think council would establish criteria where we wanted to do complete streets and some of the other things, and that's why we're finishing up South 16th to match North 16th. That's why we looked at Mentone. We took Mentone all the way from city limits to 4th Street, Long Branch. We recently did that. So that's why, you know, I think now that we've got a good network of streets in, maybe we start to talk about PMI and filling in places like Nice and Baden and things of that nature. So I will give staff props that they've implemented the direction that council has given on those streets. With respect to, let me stop there, because I didn't ask the public if they wanted to comment on this item before we got into. Did anyone else have any more questions? I'm sorry.
Just the question you'd asked, did we give direction to do Grand to Long Branch on South 9th?
I believe we had given direction to include that into one of the groupings. City Manager, do you?
I'm pulling out the report. I believe it may have been included within the project that kind of wraps around Manhattan, Seabright, 11th Street. I think it was one of the segments as part of that particular project.
That is correct.
That's project number three based on the priority list council established.
That is correct. Thank you, City Manager.
Thank you.
Okay. Let me open this up and see if there's anyone from the community that would like to address this item.
So Sue Strebe in Grover Beach, and I'm a resident on South 9th. And I just would like a point of clarification. Are the are the Measure K funds being used on a street that has businesses and residential?
I'll take. Do you have any other questions?
I have a whole bunch of comments after my brain kicked in when you moved on to the subject of third in the lights. But yeah. I'll save those for a personal exchange down the road. I just wanted to touch on that, Councilman Peterson brought up about 9th.
So based on community input from a prior meeting, the council gave direction to staff to include South 9th between Grand Avenue and, I believe, Long Branch.
Yeah, it is. It's Long Branch.
Yes. So that is K-14 dollars.
It is K-14.
That is correct. Those are residential streets.
Thank
what
you.
K-14 doesn't, what we cannot use K-14 dollars for are the major arterials, which are the Grand Avenues,
yeah.
The Oak Parks, the South 4th, the Farrells.
Right. Got it. Thanks.
Okay. Yeah. Is there anyone else? Seeing no one come forward, let me close it to the public and bring it back to the council. So, chart's already on the wall. So what is the council, who wants us to lead this, to start this discussion off?
Well, I'm going to start,
okay.
If that's okay. I think I may be thinking along slightly different lines, and I'd like to say why. We've done a lot of work on Oak Park, and I would really like to see us focus on Grand Avenue. I'm hearing from folks from all parts of the community saying it's our showcase. Let's do that now. And the other thing is that if the nicer Grand Avenue is, the more sales tax we bring in. And sales tax is 20% of our income. I think our property tax is the next biggest, which is 39%. So if we have Grand Avenue looking beautiful, we bring in more sales tax. It's as simple as that. And so I think that that's the only one that I won't say it's self-funding. That would be, it's certainly not self-funding within a year on sales tax. But I think that there'll be payback on that, in a good payback on that. And as far as North 4th, I'm not hearing anyone. Now, maybe I'm just not hearing it. South 4th is a disaster, but I do feel we could go to slow cog on that. And in fact, obviously go to slow cog on all of them. And the other thing I'm hearing is that people are really happy with what they're seeing happening between 8th and 11th and west of 4th. But now they're saying, could we connect it? And I know we have a vision for that, long-term vision. But at some point, I'd like to throw that connection into the mix and see if we can't find some funding for that, too.
Okay. Anyone else?
Well, I had a question just about that suggestion, because I'm seeing Grand Avenue from Oak Park to 11th would be $2.1 million. How much do we even have? We don't have that.
You have just over $600,000.
Right. Okay.
In this year.
Mm-hmm. And then will we get... I guess I'm just trying to figure out what are we actually going to even be able to get done, because it seems like we can't do a full depth rehab of any of these. So are we going to wait another year and wait for $600,000 more? Or I don't know.
Design now, straddle years.
Okay.
And actually, that was going to be perhaps my comment. If I can jump in.
I think you can jump in here.
Cool. If we take under the full depth rehab, 2.1. Plus 1.56 multiplied by 15%, which is what Mr. Ray indicated was our approximate design costs, that's about $555,000 or $556,000. So from that perspective, if we did the design on both the South Oak Park segment and the Grand Avenue segment, that provides the proverbial shovel-ready projects for us to go to slow cog mm-hmm. and proceed with local funding matches or then potentially use it for construction in subsequent years through potential continuing funding through SB1 or other sources. Mm. So, if we do the design of both, realizing it is going to take us another year to or two to get full funding for construction.
The question is, what is the design? Is it going to be for the full whack, or we're going to look at design for...
I think that's the discussion we're trying to have.
My recommendation would be the full depth rehab.
Oh, okay.
Because that's, I mean, if you take the two...
Full depth rehab on Grand?
On Grand as well as Oak Park. So, okay. Unless there's some information from Mr. Ray that the full depth rehab on Grand Avenue isn't... That there's more effective ways to use that funding.
So, hold on, Barbara, you have anything?
No, nope, I'm just gathering information here.
Did you?
Let me make sure I understand the question. So you're asking if full depth rehab is not the proper treatment on Grand, or just if that's not the most efficient use of the funding?
You brought up, you kind of jogged my question into a separate lane. But, I mean, at this point, the recommendation would be from staff to do a full-depth rehab from Oak Park to 11th on Grand Avenue, correct?
Based on the current condition of the asphalt, going all the way back to our street saver analysis we did a few years back, Grand Avenue would be ready for a full-depth rehab.
And so then what happens between 8th and 11th? So is that just a potential future project? I mean, going back to what Councilmember Peterson said with regards to, obviously, we've got businesses, we've got frontage, we've got some improvements that have been done there. So is that where is 11th where the full depth stops from
no.
a necessity standpoint?
No. No, really, really, to be honest with you, West Grand is ready for full depth rehab all the way to 4th Street about.
So might I jump in here?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to ask the question and make a statement. This isn't meant to be political. It's just the reality of what it is. The monies that you've identified in this staff report, are those a product of Prop 6? Or what percentage?
So, yes. Take you back to that slide there. There it is. So $300,000 of SB1 funding is at risk relative to Proposition 6.
Okay. The funds that are identified through the development impact fee, can they be used for design, or do they have to be used for actual improvement?
I think they could be used for design.
Okay. I guess I was thinking two things. We've done North Oak Park. We were very fortunate to get over $2 million through other sources beyond K-14. I thought we had an opportunity to try and fix an unsafe situation in front of Vaughn's on South 16th. And I don't know if this is not enough monies to do that, because I think that was a concern brought up. And quite honestly, I don't use... In talking to citizens of this community who identified issues that need to be resolved, there was a significant number in a meeting that the city manager and I think Commander Miller was in last year, that identified that as being an issue. People coming down the hill on Oak Park, and instead of staying in a lane that turns into Vaughn's, they're trying to race to get in front of folks. I believe there's a project that has been approved down there, so I don't know if there's an opportunity to partner and get that done. And I guess I've kind of rethought. I was originally thinking full depth rehab, but maybe if we can do the grind and overlay, we can at least get down to Mentone, and we could probably find the money to do that sooner than later. I would say Grand Avenue, I agree, those are all excellent comments. We know that SLOCOG has funded three phases of enhancements on Grand Avenue. And I'm talking to Mr. DeCarli, who recently retired, and Mr. Rogers, who is the new executive director, that there is a real feeling of we've started this on Grand, we should finish it. And so that's a conversation I think needs to be had between myself as your representative on SLOCOG, the city manager, and the city engineer, to see where there are opportunities. So if I circle back to the issue of SB1 funding, which is known as Prop 6 on the ballot this year, should SB1 funding stand and then not be repealed, do we know what's the potential dollars that could come to this community? Because those are monies that we can use to fix Grand and to maintain these beautiful streets we're doing right now, because we still have to figure out how do we maintain what we're installing. So I don't know if staff's got an estimate.
So you're asking about the annual allotment from SB1 funding. Should Prop 6 be rejected?
Yes, that's correct.
Yes.
He's right.
Yeah.
That's right. You said it right.
It's roughly $300,000 a year.
$300,000 a year. So that might be something in that if, let's say, perhaps that's rejected, this funding source remains, we're talking $300,000 a year. Is that something the council could go out and borrow money against a committed stream of income that we know would be coming? Then you could do $2 million on Grand Avenue. I mean, so that's a conversation to have after November. I'm trying to, you know, so if I think if we, you know, as much as I still believe North 4th needs some work, because if you look at that street, it's starting to unravel. You can see the seam, and so, but I'm just trying to put these things in a proper context. So, so I would just say perhaps given that we've got $654,000, we probably will have access to some additional dollars to maybe South Oak Park and solve an existing unsafe situation, and then start the planning for Grand Avenue and North 4th. I think that might be a prudent way to go, but, you know, that's just the way my twisted mind works.
So are you saying to do the grind and overlay part, the option, the $801,000 option in the South Oak Park?
Yes.
I would agree with that. That's something I had really thought about at the last meeting, because not being an engineer myself, I just feel like I'd like to see more blocks done. And I know it won't last as long, but it would, especially we'd be able to get that area safer, because there are a lot of blind spots coming out, not just coming down that street, but even when you're trying to turn out, that I think we could help alleviate that. One thing that I will say about the grind and overlay process, being a layperson and not an engineer and not a planner, is I think it's hard for people to understand. And I just started understanding that what that means myself. I got a video. Unless you are able to rebuild the foundation of the street, which we will not be able to do, that grind and overlay will start sloughing away from day one. And, you know, when we redid certain streets, we get complaints from people, you didn't do it right, it's sloughing away. As long as people understand this will slough away, that's what it is, but we're trying to do more.
So I think this is a little different, though, correct? That was just a slurry seal before. What's the depth of, would this be, Jeff, is it typically 1.5 to 2 inches, Greg? Or what
inch and a half would probably be the minimum, yeah.
So I think it'll be a little more sturdy.
It will, okay. Yeah.
It's a pretty significant process. You're going to end up with a street that would look and feel new, that would likely survive at least 7 years, and then, you know, the pavement life could be hopefully extended by maybe a slurry seal or some other kind of additional maintenance work down the road.
And so if we can get it to Mentone, which was done up to Grand, I think that would complete at least Oak Park. I would say North 4th. We did that street not that long ago, so I would think to do a grind and overlay, I mean, what are you designing? It's a fixed width. It's a fixed curb and gutter. Jeff, you can jump in here. I mean, I'm just a planner. I know just enough to get myself in trouble. So,
I mean, I can help you on that. So from a design perspective, a grind and overlay is pretty simple. You do have to have a biddable set of plans, though. So really, mostly what you're identifying is existing striping, existing utilities, things that need to be moved, relocated during the work, and then replaced back. It's a very simple design process in terms of grind and overlay. Mm-hmm.
So if we were to do grind and overlay, say, on South Oak Park at $801,000 and with some work it might last 10 years, Then when we come back to it in 10 years, are we at the full depth rehab again and we're back at 1.56 million? Except it'll go up in 10 years, of course.
Yes.
So it's either 1.56 now or it's, and that lasts after 20 years, or it's about 24,000, 2.4 million over the next. Oh, man, that's a hard one to figure out. I'm not that good at math. But that's, for me, the you know, we weigh it up. How much more are we going to have to spend later if we don't do it now, I think is where I'm coming from here on this.
Well, those are really difficult conversations. I mean, yeah. from a purely pavement management perspective, you would want to put the right take the right approach at the right time based on the mm-hmm. lifespan and the current condition of the pavement. But you have limited dollars, and almost every community faces this. You can't always do the exact right recommended approach. You could have a street that provides a lot of service for half the price.
My other question on that is, there's a lot going on here with fiber optic. There's a lot going on with old infrastructure, with drainage and changing of some ways that we may handle stormwater. Are we ready for the full depth rehab if we may need to be doing some more tearing up in the next 10 years?
I would say on Grand that those are valid points because, mm-hmm. I mean, we've talked about upgrading more storm drains. We were able to mm-hmm. do from 4th to Highway 1. The next stretch would be, 5th to about 9th Street. So those are valid points, and so perhaps we can move forward with, let's say, Oak Park, Grand and Overlay, because I think that street seems to have held up pretty well. Mm-hmm. To and because, like before, we talked about full depth rehab, we were only talking about being able to go a block to Long Branch, maybe. So
barely two blocks.
So we can do that. I think North 4th. It's like we just talked about. If it's Grand and Overlay, yeah, you're going to put together some specs, but it's not a rehab because we redid that street completely, 15. Mm-hmm. 12 years or so ago, 15 years ago. So then we can start, you can give direction and start working on Grand Avenue, and I think that's that conversation with SLOCOG, because we need to talk about how do you get from I love the idea of Oak Park to 11th or 13th, but, you know, maybe the practicality of it is that maybe we could only do a block from Oak Park to 16th Street, at least that's in front of Vaughn's where there's a heavy traffic, but then also start figuring out how do we get additional funds and if things are positive on November 6th, there may be an additional source of pot of money that you can revisit. City Manager?
Just to make sure I'm hearing the council correctly, regarding Grand and Overlay on South Oak Park, Grand, Mentone, $800,000. If that's the direction that the council goes, we'd have to look at $150,000 of additional funding to help support that project above and beyond what's budgeted for major streets this fiscal year. So those are funds that would need to come either from the outside, from SLOCOG or elsewhere, from reallocation of capital project funding, from general fund reserves, through other sources that we'd look at if that was the council's direction.
So I would say curiosity would be would be the timing. So is there, because you're going to have to go through a process of putting together the specs, putting together bids. You're going to find yourself starting in the next calendar year. So you may actually find a situation where you can plan it all out and pay for it over 2 fiscal years. So I think those are details that need to be worked out. We just need to give you some direction.
Got it.
So with that in mind, I go back to I hear the discussion going towards the Grind and Overlay, and I'll go towards the kind of the direction being do the design of South Oak Park Grind and Overlay, and now the North 4th Street Grind and Overlay with our available funding. And then start to have the conversation early next year, whether it's we budget it for July or whether there's additional funding from SLOCOG to complete those projects.
Yeah, and I would say that we should have that conversation with SLOCOG sooner than later.
Right. And then if there's additional funding, so from a 1, 2, 3, 4 standpoint, I'd say 1, design South Oak Park, 2, North 4th Street, 3rd, Grand Avenue, and then 4th, South 4th.
Would continue to be on less than that.
That's not where I'm going. I'm going 1 Grand Avenue. 2 South Oak Park, 3 North 4th.
All right. Well, someone try a motion. Let's see where this gets us.
Well, I'll go ahead and make a motion that we proceed with design of under the grind and overlay condition of South Oak Park Boulevard, Grand to Mentone, then based upon available funding, North 4th Street from Grand to Ocean View, and then subject to available funding, Grand Avenue from, as stated, with the future direction for to potentially secure additional funds through SLOCOG or other means.
I'll second that for discussion, and I think the one thing I would say is I think we're all in agreement on Grant, and maybe we're not saying that has to wait for the other two. The fact that there's a potential another funding source that could come forward sooner, but I think that's a really good course of action.
Yeah. Was the motion to go with, on South Oak Park, the grind and overlay?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I think from my perspective, if we design them, and then if SLOCOG comes forward with funding first on Grand Avenue, we construct that one first. If there's funding for Oak Park because of some other funding source, we do that one next. I mean, I think the direction of design for all three of them for Shovel Ready becomes where my approach is trying to accomplish.
So my concern is, can you design them all at the same time, or are they designed consecutively? Because the point you made was Shovel Ready. Mm-hmm. And so that's my question.
Staff?
I think this is kind of similar to the Measure K project. I mean, if you put out a single contract for design of a large group of work, depending on the size of the firm, they're going to more or less design it in a linear fashion. So you're really designing them one after another, not all at once. If we put out three independent designs, costs would go up a little bit, but they could all be being designed simultaneously.
So perhaps you could do the two grind and overlays together and then the Grand Avenue, because I think where you're talking about full depth we have on that job.
Mm-hmm. We could, actually, that maybe that's the modification to my motion, is mm-hmm. that the Grand Avenue would be the full depth rehab. And to Debbie's question.
And I agree with that modification as the second.
Okay. So with that, I think we would be within our $656,000 of available funding that we have currently to do all those designs.
Well, it's a grinding overlay. Come on. Let's get it done and get it done. Let's not be trying to over-design stuff that's already got a set curb width, set gutters, and it's really a matter of taking it down the depth of 1.5 or 2 inches and building it back. So I don't understand. We're not designing a new street.
Right. So. Exactly. Yep.
So could you restate? I'm sorry.
I just had a question too. If you want to restate.
So to restate the motion, we do design under the grind and overlay option for number 1, South Oak Park, number 2, North 4th Street, and then 3, full-depth rehab design for Grand Avenue.
And that's going to take, and I agree with that, so I'm going to sustain my second, and I think that's a natural break, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My only concern is it's good to have the project shovel-ready, but then it sounds like in the next year we don't really get any roads fixed because we just are be able to do design.
But we're going to be able to leverage those funds with other funding sources.
So you leverage this fund, you leverage Oak Park and North 4th, and that's why I was talking about the timing. The timing is you're already in October, it's November, you're going to have the holidays, and the truth of the matter is they're not going to get specs done, they're not going to get bids back, and by the time this project's under construction, you're going to be close enough to a new fiscal year that you're going to be considering a new budget where you can add additional funding. So we're talking about money that's just for this fiscal year. I'm trying to get everyone to think beyond this to say you can match that or do more in the next fiscal year and get the top two done. And then Grand Avenue, you have a lot better idea of where we are after November. Is it 6th? Just saying.
Correct.
Yeah. Those are just realistic facts. It's not a political statement.
Well, and I'll go along with the motion as it's made, but I still want to advocate that South 4th remains on our radar mm-hmm. because it's kind of the same issue that if it's never designed, we're never going to be able to seek help on it.
I think it's still on this list, but I think
it's number 4.
You guys will have to have the conversation when it's prioritizing because you're talking about fixing a street, competing against another street where you've got 52, let's say, you know, more than 50 homes on it versus one home in an area that's not going to be traveled as regularly. So if you can sell that to the residents, the people whose money this is, more power to you.
So
I think it stays on the list, and you guys can deal with that.
The motion hasn't really changed then.
No, the motion has not changed.
Okay.
So let's call. I'm going to call the question. Donna, roll call, please.
Mayor Pro Tem Lee.
Yes.
Mayor Schultz.
Yes.
Councilmember Nichols.
Yes.
Councilmember Peterson.
No, I'm fully in favor of all of these. I think Grand Avenue should be prioritized.
And Councilmember Shaw.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. And like we said before, if the funds and resources are there, Grand Avenue would also be a priority. So with that, let's take a 10-minute break.
Are we having
a I just have an ergonomics assessment, and I was told you were supposed to stand up every 30 minutes.
Oh, there you go.
And we're doing a terrible job. Ready? We're going to reconvene the Grove Beach City Council meeting. It is still Monday, October 15, 2018. We're going to go to council committee reports. So who's got a committee report they'd like to give this evening? No? Ben?
Yeah, yeah. I kind of updated when we were talking about the homelessness issue. That would be my update.
Fantastic. How about council communications?
Well, I just have the one that I was kind of telling you guys about, and I just wanted to thank people publicly and kind of make it known publicly. Out in the rest of the world, I'm the PTA president at Grover Heights, and we're having an event. That's my most important thing. We are having an event at the school. We usually call it Donuts with Dads, but we kind of got some feedback that some kids feel sad because they don't have a dad or even an uncle or anyone to bring. So this year we're trying it as Donuts with Dudes, and we've had some very awesome dudes from our community. Our mayor is going to come, and people from our police force and our fire chief. And I just want to thank everyone in advance for doing that. I don't know how many kids will come without a dude, but I am thankful for a supportive community that just with kind of one email, tons of dudes stepped in. So that's just really awesome.
So dudes show up, there'll be plenty of donuts.
Yes. We even ordered more donuts than usual because we need donuts for everyone.
All right.
When is this?
It's Friday morning.
God, I was trying to think of my, I don't have a favorite donut. I haven't eaten a donut in so long. Buttermilk glaze, there we go. I think there's a, right. All right. Any other council communications?
Just a kind of logistical council communication with regards to out in the community and so forth. There's a contingent of folks, and I think there's the public in general would like to see some of our parks that have been closed to consider them be reopened with regards to specifically like the Mentone Drainage Basin Park or some of the improvements that have been done over at 16th Street Park to make sure that the community can continue to utilize those parks in a good and useful fashion.
So why don't we let the city manager give us an update on where we are with some of those? I think it's really the you're thinking Mentone and 16th Street Park.
But yeah, but all the parks in general. Just but those two specifically.
Yes, so the council did approve two capital projects in this year's budget for park facilities. Actually, three, but two regarding parks that you just mentioned, Mentone Park and 16th Street Park. So those are on our work program for this year. On Thursday, the Parks, Recreation, and Beautification Commission is meeting, and they'll be discussing Mentone Park improvements. They recently conducted a neighborhood survey of needs across the nearby area. They'll be discussing those results and discussing some potential ideas for improvements so that they can come up with a recommended framework to come back to the council for a design of a project and move forward with park improvements. That would be a great opportunity to discuss the Mentone Basin access and how that fits into that broader discussion. And we've reached out to residents to encourage them to attend that meeting as well. With regards to the 16th Street Park, we do have that project in place, looking at probably a combination of playground repair, playground improvements, restroom improvements. So that is on our list this year. That is trailing behind Mentone Park to make sure we get Mentone off and running first, and then we'll follow up with 16th Street Park after that. I'll also mention that the mulch and wood chips, the corner of 14th and Trueville, are intended to be relocated to their permanent home, the Oak Park Landscape Medians, a project that will begin here in the next month.
Okay.
Okay, very good. Was that all you had?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Barbara, you have anything? No
communication? The South County Chambers will be meeting, have their luncheon in Napomo this month. At 11:30.
Okay. On Wednesday.
On Wednesday, yes.
All right. So I have a few things.
And that's at Edwards Barn. Sorry.
Okay. So I have a few things. When we were talking about pedestrian improvements or traffic improvements, and the lighting. I know that it sounds like we have on 4th Street near Atlantic City, we do have the pedestrian activated crossing, but there's also some non-functioning bulky traffic arms that are, if they're not operating, it's certainly visual blight. I've seen similar crossings in other communities where we didn't have those things, and so I believe one is located on Parkview and one is at Saratoga. This is all on North 4th Street. City Manager, is there a status on that, or and I'm wondering if the council should give direction to have those removed if they're not functioning, because I think the intersections would still be just as safe, and I know that there have been members of the community who have expressed concerns with those.
My understanding is that those arms are both operational. They are part of the overall pedestrian activated warning lights that we discussed a little bit ago. So as for a status, there really is no further status. If the council wished to see those arms removed, that's direction that you can provide.
Okay. So let's see if there's any interest in having that conversation regarding those, you know what I'm talking about, there. They're about, 25 feet up, and then the arms reaching over the...
And they've got the pedestrian...
Mm-hmm. But we also have those pedestrians side on the ground level.
Right.
Okay.
I have to admit, I have not driven through there recently where they've been activated.
So then, just tonight, then raising everyone's awareness of them, maybe take a look and at a future meeting have that discussion of, is there interest to place something like that on a future agenda, even if it's with the citywide study or whatnot.
Because
I think what's that issue is, would we still have the same level of safety if they were not there? And if so, then, you know, the question is, why would we continue to keep something there that is visual blight that takes away from the street enhancement and a major entryway into this city?
Right. Well, the tall poles with the pedestrian sign on them are functional, though.
Yeah, I know. I had misunderstood. I had thought they were not functional, but
oh, no.
That was my.
So, just
mistake.
You're talking about the ones that come up through the sidewalk?
I'm talking about this one tall one that's right next to a beautiful home that was remodeled. I couldn't imagine living in that house. Anyway,
okay.
Just take a look. I mean,
okay.
There's one at Parkview,
huh?
One at Saratoga. Okay. It's a major entry into the city, and if we can accomplish the same thing with something not as intrusive, then I think we should take a look at that. The next three things I want to put out there and let the city manager address them during his communications. I believe there is a technology ribbon cutting with Digital West later this week. We had talked about planning for some event on before the holiday parade with the businesses that are between 4th and Highway 1. And then I know we got an update, but the community would like an update on the parking lot. That's one where the post office is, and then obviously at the Trueville at the community center. So I'll put that out there for the city manager to respond to as he gives us his reporting comments. So with that, city manager, you have the floor.
Excellent. Thank you very much. I did have those included in my comments along with other items, so thank you very much. So first, regarding the Digital West groundbreaking, we have been coordinating with Digital West regarding some kind of event that would recognize the installation of the fiber broadband network. The council has put in over $700,000 in funding to help bring on this new network, and we've been working diligently with Digital West to get it done. I am coordinating with them on lighting the fiber. At this point, that has not yet happened. So at this point, we are not planning an event for this week. We're hoping to have this in the next week or two, October 25th or so. It really is dependent upon getting the fiber lit. And as of now, it is not yet lit. So I'm coordinating with Digital West. We're making sure that we have a working fiber network that we can officially unveil to the community. So more details to come.
Crack the whip on those dues. See, we're running out of time here, man.
It's actually crack the whip on AT&T because it's their circuit, and they're actually installing the circuit to be able to leverage our network. So it's a multi-agency work. So So secondly, on the holiday event idea on West Grand Avenue, I have been working with Jocelyn Brennan on this, and we did reach out to one of the businesses to begin the conversation. We'll follow up this week to get things rolling. So that is in motion. Given the timing, it may be a very more kind of limited, targeted event this first time to do something and then build on that for the future. So more to come on that one. And then on the parking lots, we are finalizing the specs on both the Ramona Square post office side of the parking lot and the Grover Beach Community Center parking lots to move both of those forward at the same time, to have economies of scale and having one contractor bid out the contract for both of those parking lots, since the work is roughly the same in the treatment involved. So those specs will be done here in the next couple of weeks, and we are looking at a council award by the end of the year so that we can begin construction early 2019 on those important projects in your capital budget for this fiscal year. Beyond that, I'll also highlight that our Public Works Department has been very busy working on the train station expansion project, overseeing that important council priority, and we're very pleased to see that project coming forward. Also, I mentioned the Oak Park landscape medians. You've seen some work starting to take place, and we'll see more coming forward in November. And also the Grand Avenue light poles and tree lights. We've been repainting all the pedestrian light poles. I was at 3rd and Grand today, and I saw some work being done, and that's really looking great, improving the aesthetics down there. We'll be improving the rope lighting as well around the trees. So our Public Works Department has been very busy at all those projects and maintenance improvements to make our city better. I want to commend the work that they do. Also, I'll recognize our police and fire departments today for their response to an incident at Grover Beach Elementary School. Our first responders did a fantastic job. I want to thank Chief Lieberman, who's not here, and Acting Chief Miller for being part of the Unified Command today, along with La Ciamara School District and other agencies. At no point were the children at risk. They were sheltering in place. They were safe in their classrooms, and the first responders were taking care of the situation, taking care of making sure the device that was found was safely removed and the investigation underway. So I really want to commend our first responders. They did a fantastic job today and demonstrating the professionalism and attention to detail that we are known for here in Grover Beach. And also, lastly, I'll just highlight our Parks and Recreation staff. We've done a magnificent job with weekend events in the last two weekends. Everything from the Grover Beach Cleanup Day to the Five Cities Oktoberfest oversight to basketball clinics, tennis clinics, and then last Saturday our Movie in the Park night, which drew 75 people after hours to Ramona Park under the stars to watch a great family movie and have community time together. So kudos to Kathy, to Nora, to Brooke, to the volunteers. Excellent job. We have the Trunk or Treat and Car Pumpkin coming up on October 26th to round out this month's set of activities. But again, a great example of what your staff is doing to help support the community and put on events that people are coming out to support each and every day. So thank you for our staff, and thank you for that work.
Great, thank you. City Attorney, you have any comments or reports tonight? Looks like we have no closed session tonight. So with that, we are adjourned.